Meeting would come to order, please. This is the Senate State Affairs Committee meeting. It is Tuesday, April 11th, and it is approximately 3:35 in the afternoon. We have the full membership of the committee here, so we do have a quorum. We have two items on the schedule today. First is a confirmation hearing for, Human Rights Commission, and we have Randy Elledge, I believe is the pronunciation, online. So I'd like to go to Mr. Elledge to see, take comments from him, so we can dispense with that first. Mr. Elledge, are you online? Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. I sure can.
And did I pronounce your name right?
You did great.
Okay. If you would just like to introduce yourself to the committee as we scan over the resume information that you've provided here.
Sure. Now, first off, I sure appreciate the opportunity to come before the committee and tell you how much I've enjoyed the service that I've had with the Human Rights Commission thus far. I think this is a reappointment hearing. My background is, pardon me?
Go ahead. Somebody just coughed, that's all.
Okay. I have you on the speakerphone so I can be hands-free. I came to Alaska January the 20th, 1982, raised my family here, and Alaska's been very good to me. I'm really happy to be here and not interested in leaving anytime soon, especially since spring is coming and fishing is right around the corner. I've been in several capacities, been serving on other boards, Sioux City Girl Scout Council, member of the IADC, that's the International Association of Drilling Contractors. Currently, I'm vice president of business development for Marsh Creek. That's an Alaska Native corporation, an 8A set aside. Had my own business for several years, sold it, manufactured rep for various products for industry, as well as oil field, and performed just about every function that is imaginable as a small business owner. So I think that's pretty much my story.
Okay. And can you tell me, just looking here, see, Army experience, your job, do you have any particular training? You're not an attorney, are you?
No, I am not an attorney.
Any kind of professional license of that type or another type?
No, I have no license that come to mind.
Okay. And you have been on the commission since when?
I just finished my first year in March.
Okay.
There was a one-year slot that the governor needed to fill, or the governor's office, I should say, needed to fill, and I was asked if I was interested, and I did my research and responded that I'd be happy to serve the state of Alaska.
Okay. Other questions from committee members?
No. None for me.
Seeing none, I think that you've served a year. Your name hasn't appeared in any headlines, apparently, and I guess having confirmed you once before, the group feels comfortable with forwarding your name on for further consideration.
No, I sure appreciate your review. Sure appreciate the job that y'all are doing down in Juneau to keep up the good work.
Okay. Thank you. Then with that, if I could just have a motion to advance the name. Senator Wagner.
I'd move that we forward the name of Randy Elledge for confirmation for the Human Rights Board.
Without objection, then we will get names on the...
Commission for Human Rights, excuse me, Mr. Chair.
The letter, which does, of course, not commit any member of the committee to vote yes or no on actual confirmation. Next item that we have up is Senate Bill 234, Act relating to a community dividend program, introduced by the Rules Committee at request of the governor. And who do we have from the administration? Would you come forward, please? If you just state your name for the record and then introduce the bill for us, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mike Black. I'm the Director of the Division of Community Advocacy in the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. On behalf of the administration, we would like to recommend this bill to the committee and urge that it be passed on to the Finance Committee. And with the bill itself is provides a community dividend, which is a, by design, a reliable and sustainable source of funding for community revenues to the municipalities of the state. It relies upon the Amaretta Hess account as the funding source and is estimated to provide $27.6 million in annual earnings through the Alaska Capital Income Fund. The bill proposes to establish a base grant amount to all cities and boroughs in the state. $10 million of the total funding would be annually distributed to all cities and boroughs, and that funding would be based upon population and population ranges for cities. And for boroughs, all boroughs would receive a base amount of $50,000. And then the base, the balance of the funds would be distributed on a per capita basis. There is a section of the bill which provides a financial incentives for borough organization, of which an incorporation grant would be provided to any borough formed after passage of the bill, which would provide for $1 million organizational grant on the first year, followed by a second year grant of an equally amount of $1 million, and finally a third year amount of $500,000. So in fact, it would change from our current formula of $600,000 over 3 years to $2.5 million for every new borough that would form. Finally, the last section of the distribution would be approximately at this stage $16.5 million would be distributed to each borough based on per capita distribution. So in addition to the base amount, each borough would also get a per capita distribution. The eligible activities that this money could be used for are described in the bill, and they would include essential public services such as public safety, infrastructure maintenance, education, and fuel. With that, if there's anything else that you might have a question about, I'd try to answer them for you.
Senator Wagner.
I just skimming through the fiscal note. What rate of interest or income are we earning on the $424 million currently?
Senator Wagner, through the chair, I am not certain what the rate of interest is. We could find that out for you.
Would be, I guess it would be commensurate with the earnings on the permanent fund. So from, anybody have an idea, is it 8.5, 12%? It's going up.
We have averaged over 8. I think it's just a little north of 10%.
I was just thinking 6.5% of this and real growth of real dollars, I guess that would keep up with inflation over a period of time. So as the dollar was devaluated, we could increase out of the interest income there if we use these funds.
Senator Wagner, through the chair, we have indicated in our fiscal note that it's earning at approximately 6.5% interest on $424 million. which would be, that's how we arrived at the $27.6 million.
So you're estimating, I thought it was invested along with the permanent fund, it earned more than that, I don't know.
I'm not sure, it may be because of the type of instruments it can actually be invested in, because it can be drawn, that they're not able to be as aggressive.
Yeah, that was a court decision, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I just think we need to be a little cautious, and if we're going to spend all the interest earned on it, eventually we're going to. I know no problem using Amerado Hess funds, but we don't want to get right back into the same position we were in years ago, and all of a sudden, this amount is deflated, and we're looking for other funds to give to the municipalities.
And we've got somebody who's just anxious to answer your question, so if you come forward, please.
Chairman, I'm John Boucher with the Office of Management and Budget, and the 27.6, through the Chair Senator Wagner, the 27.6 projection is based upon the Cowan earnings reports or earnings projections for the permanent fund. And so, provided that the actual returns could be above or below that, this is the mid-case scenario.
And Senator Elton, did you have a question?
I have a couple of questions, Mr. Chair. The first is a continued discussion on the funding source, and maybe you can explain the administration's thought process behind identifying this as a funding source for the program.
Senator Elton, through the Chair, I'm not sure I can explain the thought process. I do understand that the administration was interested in identifying a funding source sufficient, or at least in the opinion of those that have identified the funding source sufficient for funding this type of program. It was identifiable. It had no direct incorporation into the permanent fund, and that is really the only background that I'm familiar with in that discussion, but there certainly I was not privy to all the discussion that went on.
Mr. Chair, if I could kind of follow up, I'm going to say something, and you can tell me if I'm thinking correctly or not. I mean, the problem that I have with funding source is that while it's not a dedicated funding source, it is a funding source that we anticipate or we hope that is going to spin off money in an ongoing manner, and we're precluded from having a dedicated fund. It just seems to me that the old way of doing it was a perfectly appropriate way of doing it, which would be to appropriate general funds on a yearly basis to fund a program like this, rather than be constrained by X amount of money that may be spun off each year. So I mean, I don't know if you want to respond to that or not, but I was perfectly satisfied with the old way of doing it rather than using a sub-account in the permanent fund.
Senator Elton, through the Chair, I do believe that one of the concerns has been that, as Senator Wagner pointed out, that with general fund funding, we were always subject to declines in that amount that made it unpredictable for local governments. As the fiscal picture of the state changed, there was more chance that it, with an identified source of funding, that they could have predictable amounts to be distributed. And I understand that was primarily the reason for selection of the.
Mr. Chair, if I could follow up. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but I mean, those funds are subject to appropriation to any program at all in the future in the same way that general funds are. I'm just concerned that if we identify this as a funding source, we create two problems. One is that for the first time, we're using a sub-account in the permanent fund for annual expenditure, and the other is that it may impose a certain recipe that future legislators will say, well, I mean, we're not going to spend $50 million because there's only $25 million available, and both of those seem to me to have a certain amount of problems that attach themselves to the funding source. I have another question on a different topic, but I'm more than willing if other people have.
Well, I'm not sure, Mr. Black, if you're the one to answer this, but really, Amber Hess, the proceeds of the fund, they are in fact general fund, aren't they? Mr. Ford, could you?
I believe that's correct.
Yeah. It is not a dedicated fund. They are a flavor of general fund, but they're general fund dollars.
Mr. Chair, I don't disagree with you. It is a funding source, but I mean, you can also say the same thing about the earnings of the permanent fund. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we all know the political risk associated with spending the earnings of the permanent fund also.
Big difference is the money spun off by retained earnings actually increase the yearly dividend. The money spun off by Amaran Hess does not increase the yearly dividend. So there's a big difference there. Comparison. Next question.
And kind of a bifurcated question. It seems to me there are two anomalies in the recipe here. The first is one that I hadn't thought of, but we were given a memo when we sat down from Blake and Penn that talked about a consequence that I don't think I had thought about, and I think that the memo notes that the Local Boundary Commission had actually thought about in the past, and that is that under this recipe in this bill, unincorporated boroughs are kind of left out of the program. The second thing, and this may be a misunderstanding on my part, but it seems to me that in the recipe that you have, where boroughs receive $50,000, cities receive $40,000, that what we're doing is we're creating a system that, I hate to overuse the word anomalies, but I'll use Ketchikan for example. Ketchikan is not a consolidated government. They have a city government and they have a borough government, so they'd get $90,000. Kodiak and Kenai and, well, Kenai, I don't know if you're consolidated or not. Juneau's consolidated.
No.
So in that case, you'd get about half as much under this recipe. And if you could talk a little bit about why the decisions were made on both the unincorporated communities and the cities that have not consolidated with borough government.
Certainly, Senator Elton, through the chair. The unincorporated communities within boroughs are defined as, under our current situation, would be possibly defined as 25 people residing within an area. Literally, in the road areas of the state, there would be some estimates as many as 2,000 of those communities in existence, which could be anything from homeowners associations through water districts, subdivisions, and so forth. One of the reasons that was avoided as to identifying them as recipients of the same money as municipalities or unincorporated communities outside of boroughs would be the same situation. But we literally in the state of Alaska have many, many communities that could claim unincorporated status within organized and the unorganized borough. They are generally settlement areas that are configured in a way normally because of subdivision or some sort of nonprofit status has been established for a homeowners association or whatever. So it literally it opens the doors up for a great deal of complexity as to how you determine what is a unincorporated community within an organized borough, and what kind of guidelines do you establish for those kinds of communities and who would get the money, that sort of thing. Our opinion is that the boroughs would be, because of municipal status, and the cities, because of municipal status under state law and with a defined relationship with the state of Alaska, would be the proper recipients for revenue sharing, They have a specific requirement under the law to provide services and to meet the requirements of state law as to how they operate, and not the least of which is having a democratically elected council or assembly. So that was the thinking behind not having unincorporated communities in this formula. Is that...
A follow-up on that, but then the second part of that was those governments that have consolidated the borough and city. But could, you know, to address the concerns that you raised, I mean, couldn't there be some kind of a formula that says, okay, if you provide fire service, garbage service, and three other services, that you would qualify, because at that point you have an unincorporated community that is providing public services?
Senator Elton, through the chair, if that would be an approach that would be incorporated into this bill, we would certainly recommend and strongly recommend that the money for communities that are providing those types of services be provided to the borough to make those decisions. Who is providing services within that borough? Which community associations or water districts or whatever other type of loose affiliations might be within those areas that were otherwise the responsibility of an overall regional government? That would be a decision best left to them, in my opinion. We would literally be awash in evidence and paperwork from all sorts of associations that might claim that they were providing services, but with the distance that we have between where they might be providing those services and where our offices might be, there would be a lot of room for difficult decision making, the evidence would have to be a rather cumbersome process in my mind. The borough, where an organized borough may have identified groups within that borough that are providing services such as fire protection and so forth, would be in a much better position to make that kind of decision. So that would be my recommendation, if that would be the choice of the legislature.
Okay. And then, Mr. Chair, the second part of that is, and I'm going to pick on Ketchikan because there's nobody up here from Ketchikan, but I mean, Ketchikan has both city government and borough government providing services to the same constituent base. Mm-hmm. And Juneau has consolidated its government, but under this recipe, Juneau would get 50,000, Ketchikan would get 90,000. And I wonder if there had been discussion of that anomaly.
Senator Elton, there's, to my knowledge, not been a direct discussion about the Ketchikan or municipality of Anchorage or any other unified municipality boroughs, if you will. Of course, one thing that you could certainly point out is that when you have a separate city and a borough government operating, even though they're operating in much the same area, you do have two administrations. And there is a certain amount of overhead with two functioning governments that might argue that the base amount be provided to them. The base amount really is an overhead kind of component, if you will, because all the money beyond the $10 million would be distributed to boroughs on a per capita basis. So the majority of the money would be distributed to a unified municipality or a separate city, borough, municipal area, such as Kodiak, would be distributed based on their populations. The majority of the money would be distributed, except for that smaller base amount.
Just a comment in response, and then I'm mm-hmm. done. I mean, I understand that there is overhead, but that is why some governments have been unified. It's so that they don't have to spend excess public dollars on excess overhead. And that's it for me, Mr. Chair. Thanks. Okay. Thanks, Mr. Black.
Thank you. Other questions from community members? Can you tell me the way this, for the unorganized area, the way the bill is structured, there's the incentive. to become organized. And that's why the $2.5 million here for the new borough formation is in. There's no allowance for funds. Is it just the per capita or no allowance of any of the funds to flow through for an unorganized municipality?
Mr. Chairman, there would be, as you implied there, the per capita amount would be provided to the boroughs. Obviously, unincorporated areas would be included in that per capita count.
Yeah.
And then it would be up to the boroughs to make distribution based upon services or how they feel that even individual community associations might receive money under a particular borough if that was their choice.
Mm-hmm. And just a quick question on the municipalities organized under federal law. Yeah, could you touch on that?
Well, Mr. Chairman, this is a provision to take care of the Metlakatla Indian Reservation.
Okay. That's what I just wanted to check. Other questions? Seeing none, we do have, thank you very much, Mr. Black. We have a list of people to testify. Next, why don't we take Ron Long?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I'll be very brief. First, I need to let you know that the views I express are...
State your name and any affiliation, or if you...
My name is Ron Long, and I'm representing myself and not the Kenai Peninsula Borough.
Okay.
In case anyone should guess, although I suspect were other members here, they would share our views. And what I would like to ask the committee to consider is a sustainable funding mechanism for communities that this bill, I feel, is a good start towards. And in my view, at least, part of the reason for a community dividend is to restore and offset some of the tax that we impose on our citizens to carry out mandates from the state. And those vary from municipality to municipality. In the borough, and our borough particularly is about the size of West Virginia, has within it 50,000 people, five distinct cities that make up about a third of the population. And the borough provides, a second-class borough, provides a very basic level of mandated services. Additional levels of services are within the cities, whether they be home rule or first-class cities, that provide services beyond the level authorized by the Mandatory Borough Act and the voters of the borough. And so what this really amounts to me is a restoration of some of the taxes that we impose on our citizens to carry out those mandates, whether as a city or a borough. And it provides meaningful tax relief for not just our residential property owners, but for businesses as well. We are, after all, in this together, and hopefully we can find a way to restore this through whatever funding formula that the legislature and the administration can identify as sustainable and repeatable and transparent so that we can build a better budget for our citizens around. Just a side note on the unincorporated areas, one of the reasons that I think this bill makes sense is, again, going back to the idea of offsetting some of the taxes that we impose on our citizens. In the unincorporated areas, there are no unfunded mandates by the state. They're not taxing their citizens to provide the services that we do. So that distinction, I think, needs to be kept in mind, and appreciate your work on this. Thank you very much.
Can you give me an idea of, from your perspective, the unfunded mandates, a function that the state law mandates that you do that without that state law you wouldn't do?
When, Senator Dale, Chairman, when it first comes to mind is the $150,000 senior exemption. In our borough over this past year, that's amounted to a $3.2 million shortfall that we might, but might not do, were it up to our discretion. Another would be the reduction of school debt reimbursement from 90% to 60%. and given enough time to go back, and it didn't really come down to Juneau to testify. I came down in other business and didn't bring a notebook full of notes on this, but there are at least a few.
Okay. Okay, questions from committee members?
I'd just like it noted, I'm just about to grow into that senior property tax exemption, so be careful there, Mr. Long.
A senior in training myself.
Okay, thank you.
It'll be gone by the time I get there.
Next, Paul Foos.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Paul Foos, and I'm representing the Kuskokwim Corporation, and it is a corporation in the middle. Kuskokwim, 10 villages banded together to form this corporation. And you had before you Senate Bill 40, which was the Port Authority bill in the area, and the people there didn't really like it. It cut into their own self-determination. And we were challenged by the legislature, well, what are you going to do about it for yourself? So we wanted to pull everybody in the district together to discuss forming a borough. That was one of the things. So we applied for a grant to the Department of Commerce, and we were turned down. So what were we going to do? Kuskokwim Corporation spent its own money to bring about 100 people from all the villages together last weekend, and this was to fulfill our commitment to the legislature and specifically to Senator Huggins, and we told that we would do that and pull those people together. And growing out of that, Mike Black was there and some of the other people explained a lot about the boroughs. Growing out of that was an exploratory committee to put together a petition for a borough. But a lot of the people asked, where would the money come from? I mean, it's a very poor part of the state. Now, it's got a lot of promise because of the Donlin Creek mine. The people from the mine were there, the head of it, and said, we're not moving forward with the mine until we've got some kind of a government here that we can negotiate a tax rate with. We can't go back to our people and say, make this investment with a completely unknown tax liability on the table, and they wanted to negotiate and understand that. So it's kind of a catch-22, and that's why I say this bill is a good way to give people some resources to form a borough that want to, and some also kind of sustaining, you know, long-term. People ask what would happen if the mine, you know, when it ran out, how would it be sustained? So some kind of a long-term program in terms of a community dividend, I think, would also be helpful. And I don't know if there'll be any amendments today or other work that you need, but I would encourage you to vote it out so that the advocates of local government and our Senate Finance Committee can take a look at the financial implications of this and see if they want to do anything to support local government. And then just speaking for myself, being a former mayor and in local government, I think we need to have this basic level of support for communities because Title 29 is one of the strongest elements of democracy in our whole state, and this local government has to treat everybody the same. And it's sad to me to see some of our local governments going by the wayside in our state because they can't afford basic administration. Thank you.
Questions? Seeing none, thank you. Next, John Hosey from Valdez.
Good afternoon. My name is John Hosey. I am the city manager of the city of Valdez, and I appreciate the opportunity to address you. I'm here to speak on two things. One, in general, just in support of revenue sharing and what it means to local municipalities. It's a tough time out there right now. The city of Valdez in this current fiscal year had a $1.5 million deficit in our general fund. We're projected to go to $3 million next year. This is largely a result of PERS, TERS for the school district, our contributions to them, energy, insurance, I mean, you name it, it's across the board. Our economy is not growing to keep pace with our expenditures, and what that leaves local governments with the choice of cutting. We can't tax ourselves out of it. And the things that we're going to focus on are the core services. You know, we're going to have to provide water and sewer, make sure the streets are plowed. But that means quality of life issues tend to get cut. You know, that's when, you know, the parks, recreation programs go, the trails go, the pool goes. The things that make living in a certain community worthwhile tend to get eroded. When that happens, people leave those communities. It dwindles the tax base, and you find yourself in a downward spiral. That's why it's just important to put a voice to concern of the need for revenue sharing in general. Whether this is the ultimate bill that needs to be passed and be funded, I'll leave that to the legislature's good judgment. But in general, the communities out there need support, and they need it at a level that's going to make a difference. Some of the provisions in here are a good start, but I think you need to fund it higher than what the AMRED has can provide. You know, a $75 to $90 million level is what's going to be needed to make any kind of real difference, especially until we figure out the long-term fix to PERS and get our energy costs under control. I will say, though, I will make one comment about this bill specifically in my very brief review of it. More of a comment, really, is the discussion earlier was made about the effects of unincorporated areas in the unorganized borough. I would just like to make the comment that Valdez, an incorporated area in the unorganized borough, is providing the same services as a municipality in an organized borough. This with the same costs, the same liabilities, the same problems. This would seem to penalize Valdez for not being in an organized borough. And until the rules to form a borough become more user-friendly, I mean, right now you can't form a borough because the rules with the Local Boundary Commission make it very difficult. Unless we're willing to engage in a discussion of Title 29 changes that will make forming a borough easier, I urge caution in penalizing communities like Valdez. That's all I have. Thank you.
Questions from committee members? Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not familiar with the rules for forming a borough. Could you give me 1, 2, 3 rules that need to be changed?
Specifically, the model borough boundary philosophy has a stranglehold on any new borough formation. Somewhere around 15 years ago, they sat down and drew these lines around the state. If you do not conform to those boundaries, your proposal is pretty much dead on arrival. Wearing a separate hat, I was part of a task force formed through the Alaska Municipal League last fall to look at borough formation and the impediments to doing that. Through AML, we actually came up with recommended changes to Title 29. We've distributed it in other venues that would actually increase the authority of the Local Boundary Commission to amend petitions to make sure that the state's requirements are met, that there's no enclaves, that all the borders match, that everything's covered. But you look at each one individually on its merits, and you have the ability then to also amend it further on when situations change down the road. I mean, it's a different world today than it was 15 years ago. Right now, if Valdez wanted to form a borough, we have only one choice, and that's to take in Whittier and Cordova and form the model borough boundary for Prince William Sound. That model borough boundary, if I don't know if you're familiar with Valdez, but it excludes Thompson Pass, which is just outside of Valdez. That would be in the model borough boundary for the Copper Valley model borough boundary.
I got model borough boundary. I got that's one. Two others.
So anyway, that's the main difficulty is we need to have the ability to put petitions together for borough incorporation that makes sense, not just the state's point of view, but also from the municipality's point of view. And right now, there's no flexibility to do that. So even if Valdez wanted to form a borough, it would be very difficult.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions? Seeing none, thank you, John.
Thank you.
Next, Kevin Ritchie with AML.
Kevin Ritchie with the Alaska Municipal League, and thank you very much for taking up this very important topic.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Just a question before you go on. Explain the 75-75.
Okay.
Please.
Yes, sir. 75-75 is the policy made by the members of AML in November in suggesting how to craft a revenue sharing bill. $75,000 was considered the minimum necessary to run a local government, especially in the face of all the extraordinary fiscal challenges that municipalities are now facing. it sounds kind of funny in a way, but really the mayor of New Stuyahawk and the mayor of New York have to pretty much follow the same kind of rules for federal funding and so on. There really isn't a buy for small communities, and you have to, you know, a certain number of things you have to do, whether you've got 100 or 1,000 or 10,000 people, you know, have elections, keep minutes, codify laws, you know, different things that require quite a bit of effort. So if you don't have a substantial base for funding, even though a community is very small, to actually have a city of 200 to 300 people, you need to do quite a bit. So the 75 is just talking about cities, basically, but looking at a minimum level of funding. And then the other 75 is 75 million. Even though this bill has a lesser amount of money in it, the governor, when he spoke to AML, was very sympathetic about putting more into it, and he just wanted to have that conversation with the legislature and the public and talk about that. But at the Amarada Hess level, you can save small communities. There's enough money to do that. In terms of providing substantial tax relief and assistance to the larger communities, that really isn't there. Like, for example, one mill of property tax in Anchorage, I think, is about $25 million or somewhere in that neighborhood. So significant different scale when you get up to the larger communities to really make a difference. One point that I'd like to make is that this is becoming more of an issue that the public is really thinking about. This year, the state chamber chose revenue sharing and PERS as two of its top lobbying priorities, because they see the connection between having a strong business community and having affordable taxes. And, you know, we're getting to the point with taxation in communities that it is becoming an issue with business, becoming an issue with the public. And the last point I'd make, I think, which I think is an important one, is that when Ron Long was talking about mandates, not so much mandates, but I think, you know, truly through the Constitution, we have a partnership. You know, we have the state, and then we have the political subdivisions of the state. Citizens, whether they're paying state taxes or whether they're paying local taxes or whatever, sharing oil revenues or whatever, there's a certain amount of work that needs to get done to have people with a high enough quality of life that we consider appropriate. So the sharing of revenue with municipalities, if it's to reduce taxes, if it's to provide better services, if it's to keep small communities viable, really is, we think, of course, a high constitutional priority of the state as well. So kind of it's not about mandates as much as a shared responsibility, I think, is the way we probably look at it. So with that, there's a number of provisions in this bill that might make sense. There's probably things that need to be changed. The recommendation of passing it on to the Finance Committee to take a look at all of the different options makes some sense. Senator Elton had a question about the difference between a unified borough and a second class or non-unified borough, and that issue is addressed in the Local Government Commission's bill. It essentially has two different levels of funding. Well, I mean, three different levels: one for cities, $75,000; one for regular boroughs, $150,000; one for unified boroughs, $300,000. So it takes away some of that difference between the boroughs that have cities within them. So with that, I want to thank you very much for your time. Be happy to answer any questions.
Do we have questions from committee members? Senator Huggins.
Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Ritchie. What's the total amount under 7575?
The $75 million would be what the AML is recommending as a reasonable appropriation for a revenue sharing program, and then the $75,000 would be a minimum we feel necessary to really allow a small city to operate and fulfill its requirements.
Okay, so the total package is $75 million to do $75,000 per?
$75,000 plus a per capita distribution,
right.
Yes, sir.
Right, okay. And what are you recommending for a source?
Through the chair, the Alaska Municipal League is obviously, as many people have said, something repeatable is very important. As we all know, under the Constitution, there is no dedicated funding source. There must be a political will to fund something each year. Certainly, Amarada Hess is a reasonable base. The Alaska Municipal League talked about that. There's been some talk of interest from the Constitutional Budget Reserve. Certainly, general fund appropriations sustained the program for 30 years, pretty much. That's relatively sustainable. But again, any source, I think has been mentioned, does require the need to keep the program going, obviously.
Let me make sure I got those. You said Amaretta Hess, the revenue generated off that, Constitutional Budget Reserve interest. GF.
Yes.
Did I miss anything?
No, that's it. And it's probably others. We actually have a briefing paper prepared, which we can provide to the committee that will answer that question a bit more fully.
Okay. Yeah, I would be interested in seeing that.
And Kevin, do you have a comment on the issue that's been brought up over the unincorporated communities?
Yes, sir. I've spent quite a bit of time with the folks recently from some of the communities that are the most effective, Lake and Penn Borough, for one. They have a true need. And again, the Lake and Penn Borough has, for example, has six cities. And under our proposed revenue sharing, they would each receive $75,000, which would receive be a very substantial amount for each one of those communities. But then the borough itself, if the borough itself receives $75,000 to take care of the other half of the population, you know, there's obviously some inequities there, you know, in terms of funding. What I think makes sense, and this is something that's reflected in especially in Senate Bill 247, which is the Local Government Commission bill, is if you provide a larger amount of base funding for boroughs than you do for cities, you can kind of take care of that issue. I'm not sure what that number is. Senate Bill 247 proposed $75,000 for municipalities, $150,000 for non-consolidated boroughs, and $300,000 for consolidated boroughs. It's possible that those two numbers are somewhat low, and if the amount of base funding for boroughs would be enough, you'd have two advantages. One would be a far greater incentive for boroughs to form, because that question in a very poor area of where do we get the base funding to do the things you have to do to be a borough would be partially answered. And the second thing, it would take care of the inequities that were described in the letter that you saw before you.
Other questions? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Finally, here in Juneau, I have Mark Hickey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mark Hickey. I'm here on behalf of the Lake and Peninsula Borough. And just a couple of comments before talking about the unincorporated community question. The Lake and Peninsula Borough does strongly support a meaningful and sustainable community dividend or revenue sharing program. We have not yet endorsed a particular solution. There are a lot of options, and we've wanted to kind of see how the process unfolds. We do support strongly the AML 75-75 program, and the part that I think is particularly important to us is that meaning that minimum level for a city to cover basic costs. Any program needs to have that. It appears that you've got a memo that I put together to discuss an issue that's a concern to our borough, but it's a concern to a lot of boroughs, particularly rural, and it deals with our unincorporated communities that are within the borough. As Kevin pointed out, Lake and Peninsula Borough, we have 16 communities, and we're spread out over, I don't know, the size of our two West Virginias, probably, or one and a half. Six are cities, and 10 are unincorporated communities. And these are standalone communities, primarily Native villages, of anywhere from 75 to 100 to 125, up to 200 people, have been communities for many, many years, and are providing real services. They do fire protection, they do clinic, they do search and rescue, some do sewer and water, they do services. They are typically administered through a village administrator and a tribal council. They've looked at times being becoming cities. Some have elected to do so. Many have not. It's more costly to be a city at that level. And there's a preference to use the structure of management that they've used. But the key point is they're real and they provide services. I wanted to bring these up because it needs to be a component of any program. And different bills are dealing with this differently. The governor's bill, as I read it, and I listened to the testimony from the administration, does nothing for unincorporated communities in the unorganized and does not have any special funding for unincorporated in the organized. There is a per capita sharing. So this bill, as it's written, doesn't suffer a deficiency that some other bills have, where we're penalizing areas like Lake and Penn that have chosen to organize, have done what the state wants us to do, who have unincorporated, where we're not getting any assistance for those in our borough, but unincorporated in the unorganized are getting assistance. I know it gets kind of convoluted. The best example I can give you, I think, to put it in context, the local government commission bill was amended. I don't think it was part of the original bill, but it now provides funding for unincorporated in the unorganized, $25,000 each. Nothing different for the organized area. The effect of that, it discriminates against an area that's chosen to organize. Our borough would be better off to not be organized. And our only request is that we, in looking at this, you don't have that unintended consequence where it's actually a disincentive in the future to be a borough. Solutions, I think Kevin Ritchie's idea of bumping up the base for the boroughs might be a simple way to do it. Still needs to be such that you're at least equal or maybe a little bit ahead because you've elected to organize from the alternative if you hadn't organized. There is another solution, and it was put into House Bill 20 in 2002, the dividend bill, which we worked on with the department at that time, and they thought they could administer it. They have administered this program in the unorganized area in the past, and that is what Senator Elton brought up, and namely, have a standard that if you're going to give money to unincorporated communities, it will only go to any if they are real and they're providing services. And you can have a list and you can say 3 out of 5. We have not had homeowner associations in the unincorporated in the past become, in the unorganized, I should say, become unincorporated communities. There's a list, there's 75 or 100. I think the department's right that the current definition would present some problems and you need to fix it, but to me those are technical. I think you need to look at the basic question of what's equitable, and we just wanted to kind of point that out as you do your deliberations, and I'd be happy to answer questions. I know that issue's confusing, but it we just want to have it part of the equation to be looked at.
Are there questions? Seeing none, we'll go then to Luke Hopkins up in Fairbanks.
Thank you very much. I'm Luke Hopkins. I am a assembly member in the Fairbanks North Star Borough, and I also want to let you know that I'm on the board of directors for AML, so I may have two hats on that slide back and forth here a little bit, but bear with me. I am pleased to see that this issue of revenue sharing is being heard again. I appreciate this and in hopes that something will move forward in this legislative session. I believe that this bill is a good starting point with this level of funding, but I think the overall level needs to be increased for a statewide distribution to the 75. 75 would be fine. That would certainly work. When I look at our borough area, as you probably heard, there's rising property taxes, costs are going up, and a 75-75 piece that might be delivered to the boroughs and other entities would certainly help in offsetting this, these rising property taxes. Here in Fairbanks, as you know, we provide a piece of local school funding. It would also help offset that. I think that you should consider a floor, and I think a floor amount of $75,000 is very reasonable on a statewide level, and I ask you to consider that. I've heard the question asked about where the sources of funding might be. I too would agree that Amarillo Hess wouldn't be able to provide enough, so I would also see a portion of the interest from this CBR, and I mean, I'm up for a piece of the GF this year. Next year, as we heard, the allocation might change a little bit depending on the scenario. But said before, I think there are good sections in this bill that should be considered, and I hope that you would provide a due pass and send it on so that it can be considered by the whole body. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, do we have anybody else online that wishes to testify? Anybody else here in Juneau? If you'd come forward, please. And just state your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Peggy Cowan, Superintendent of Juneau School District. And I'm just here because a strong community makes strong schools. We're very fortunate in Juneau to have the borough fund to the cap as a tradition, and we're appreciative of that and depend on it. And they actually, at this point, are providing 43% of our budget. And I am encouraging you to support revenue sharing. I do not have the expertise to, speak to the particulars and know that there's different options and different concerns that are forward, but I certainly support the community and so that they will have the abilities to support school districts. And on an aside, I have talked to colleagues around the state and in the rural sites, as you have heard, there are situations where the school districts will have to pick up infrastructure if the communities cannot continue. But I can only speak with expertise and appreciation for the borough and Juneau and ask you for their support for them.
Thank you. Any questions? Senator Huggins.
Just a statement, Peggy, and I hope it's a left-handed compliment. I don't think I've ever been on one of your campuses here in Juneau, but I have had the privilege of seeing different teams that have come to Matsu Valley, to Anchorage, to compete athletically. And I would just say to you that without exception, your young people, you should be proud of them. They, number one, they're very competitive in athletic events and win a number of them, but most important, they're good citizens. And I say thanks for what you do leadership-wise to make that happen.
Well, thank you, and I will certainly provide that feedback to the school and the teams, and I appreciate getting the kudos and count on them being representatives of this wonderful city. So thank you. Appreciate it.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Elton.
Just a follow-up, and I really appreciate the comments of the senator, and it is a delight to hear that people that we represent, Peggy and I represent, are good ambassadors for the community. And I just, for your information, a number of the teams, and I can speak specifically to the football team. We are in a situation here in Juneau in which that is not paid for by school district funds. It's a community nonprofit that does that, and so it's especially gratifying to hear you say that, because this is one of those things in which if the school district had to do that and if the community didn't step in, it would further pinch what is happening in the classroom. So I really appreciate your comments.
Thank you. Any further questions? Seeing none, if there's nobody else to testify, what I'd propose that we do today is hold the bill until next Tuesday's meeting. You'll have time to consider whether any members have proposed amendments and still pass it out of committee and have it forwarded up to finance for consideration when they take up the global topic of municipal assistance.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Elton?
I appreciate the offer. I My understanding about the process was that they're trying to get in one committee all of the different proposals. And so I just want to clarify, I guess my impulse would not be to, I mean, there are some parts of this, especially the funding source, that I have some problems with, but I'm not sure I'm prepared to bring any amendments forward, because if in fact we're trying to get all of them together in one spot so that one committee can kind of mix and match. So I guess I'm prepared to move it, but I certainly, if it's your desire to hold it, okay, that's fine. I probably won't come forward with any amendments.
Well, if members do not anticipate coming forward with amendments, then we can entertain a motion then to move it today. Senator Wagner indicated in his note he had to go to a teleconference, but indicated that if the decision was to move it today, he would come back if his vote was needed. So there's no indication that he has an amendment either. So, okay, at this point, then the chair would entertain a motion. Senator Elton.
Mr. Chair, as long as I'm not contravening the chair's desire, I would move. Is it the A version that we have in front of us?
Yes. So
I would move Senate Bill 234, version A, with the attached fiscal note.
To finance with individual recommendations. Okay. Is there an objection? Seeing none, then we will forward it up to finance. Just for the members' information, we did not receive a committee substitute back on the bill that we heard last Thursday that dealt with video devices in cars. The drafters had some additional questions. Also, it's my understanding the drafters indicated that it was their interpretation that a BlackBerry or an iPod could potentially be swept in under that language. I'm not sure that that was our intention or the prime sponsor's intention. So we're going to continue to work on that bill and see if we can hammer out the wording of a proposed CS. So with that, we have finished today's agenda, so we're adjourned.
You're not mad at me for that.